Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Hey, Scott, remember to put the mics up next time. Hi, Josh.
Do you talk to yourself often?
I do.
Clearly.
I do. You know what else I do often?
Go to adamandeve.com.
And pleasure myself.
Do you pleasure yourself at the website?
No, I order.
Or you get something to pleasure yourself.
I order something to pleasure myself.
How do you go about ordering? I don't want to hear about the pleasuring. How do you go about ordering the thing to pleasure yourself?
Shall I make this epic?
No.
Yes, I go and I use the promo code STATIC. Using the promo code STATIC, I get 50% off of one item. 3 free DVDs, a mystery gift, and free shipping, and a nice warm feeling in my pants because I help you and I keep Lost in the Static on the air.
I'm going to start taking away the board controls from you.
No.
You don't get control of the board anymore.
Hey, look at the bright side. I didn't play our 90s opening. Should I play our 90s opening?
Stop it. We have a serious topic tonight.
Okay, I'm sorry.
God damn it. I'm going to say it. Stop being a fag. There, I said it.
So what are we discussing tonight?
Why is America infatuated with the dumb?
You mean like that promo I just did?
No, that's not the kind of dumb I'm referring to. When I say the dumb, I mean, why does, and I know I'm getting a little abstract here, but why do we, as a society, rush towards stupid shit and turn our back on intelligence? Why do we make Honey Boo Boo an international star while the men that are almost curing AIDS are completely unknown? Why does something like 50 Shades of Grey become one of the best-selling books of all time, yet all these great authors out there who are making truly original and well-written work are laboring in obscurity? See, why do we embrace the dumb?
See, I agree with you. We're embracing the dumb, and it's out there quite a bit. I also, luckily, I'm starting to see the pendulum swing the other way, but I'm just starting to see it.
If you are one of the dumbs, you don't know what a pendulum is.
Yes, but if you've been paying attention to such recent stars, especially stars on the internet, champions of smart humor and intelligent discourse, including George Takei, which, yes, he posts his fair share of dumb things, but...
You know what? You saying that, it just makes me think of You Are Made of Stupid from that mid-90s video game.
Oh,
you are made of stupid.
And that, of course, throws my brain to Plan 9. Stupid!
Stupid! Stupid! That's all I'm going to take out of you! Backhand.
Yes. But no, and this is the only time I'm going to mention this before we talk about the dumb. But this is the glimmer of hope at the beginning of the program. That is such recent stars such as George Takei, such as Neil deGrasse Tyson, Michio Kaku, and the resurgence of, that's about it, really.
You just had a dumb moment, didn't
you? Yeah, I did.
And you know what? We really honestly need to point out how our show helps contribute to the dumb.
It really
does.
We're
not exactly highbrow entertainment here, are we?
We spent an hour last week talking about breakfast cereals.
That's why I'm saying. But are we actively contributing to the dumb or just enabling the dumb?
I don't think we're doing either. I think that, especially because we do employ self-deprecating humor every now and then, or as you said earlier, self-defecating humor, and the fact that we point out this dumb, I think really the only way, you know, the only way to get rid of chicken pox once you got it is to just go through with it and deal with the chicken pox and get it done. You know, be itchy as hell and get the pox all over the place and then scar up and get over it. And I think the only way to deal with the dumb in the country is to shine a spotlight on it.
But all that seems to do is make more people go, yeah, you know what? That is kind of funny. I'm going to check that out too.
Yeah, and
shining a spotlight on it doesn't shame the dumb. It just brings more people to the dumb. It has the opposite reaction that you are expecting it to have, Scott.
You know what? I can't fight you on that one. Honey Boo Boo exists.
Exactly. See, I didn't even know about this mutant family of Hicks until they got so popular that everyone was going, oh my God, you won't believe how terrible this mutant family of Hicks is. Check this out. And it spreads like a goddamn venereal disease at a prom. It's sickening.
Here's a scary thought. What do you want to bet that in, how old is she? Is she 8?
I've never seen an episode of the Jabba the Huttner kids show.
I haven't either. The only reason I hear from him is because one of my friends made sketty for his family unknowingly and made them eat it and hated it. And for those of you that don't know, that's spaghetti
it's
with
disgusting.
Three big things of butter and just ketchup sprayed all over it. And no cheese or anything, just nothing. But anyway, I would expect, you know, they always say that the news is the news because it's the exception to the norm, and that's why it's all violent and terrible and whatnot. Is the dumb on TV because it's the exception to the norm and people want, are we laughing at these people or are we glorifying them or both?
I think you're doing both, such as the first example we're going to have of the dumb. Now, this kind of thing happens all the time. I mean, I've known nurses that say the thing we're about to bring up is not a rare occurrence at all.
Oh, I come from a medical family. My dad did trauma for years. Trust me, I've heard plenty.
Yeah, but the fact that not only did this go viral, and I'm not saying the guy should feel shame for this because, like I said, it happens all the time. But, no pun intended there, but I don't think this should have been embraced as, this is awesome! Like the internet did to it. And that is the guy who live tweeted the vibrator stuck up his ass and his trip to the emergency room to get it removed. I'm sorry, but that should not be celebrated. I'm not saying it should be shamed, but it also shouldn't be celebrated because, first of all, you guys do understand if you're going to do butt play, things have a flared end for a reason, right?
Yeah,
it's to avoid this whole thing. So you're kind of dumb to have let that happen. Let's put it that way.
Okay, it's a basic rule. If it doesn't have a flare, don't put it there.
Yeah.
that's the rule to live by, trust me.
And that's what it comes down to is you did the dumb, and then you were the fact that he was proud of, hey, look at this. This is fucking awesome. I'm now an internet star. And I really do think we've made another internet star here.
Yeah,
that scares me a little bit.
Although I did hear an interesting theory. Now, you want to talk about the dumb. I heard a theory that this was made up by Duracell.
I don't know about Duracell.
Or Energizer, one of the two.
I actually had a conspiratorial thought like that, too, that this is that this is fake, that this is somehow like an elaborate prank that went out. I don't have confirmation of that yet, but that conspiratorial thought did go through my head.
But no, I heard that it was a conspiracy, but because he does mention quite often Energizer batteries or Duracell, one of the two, I don't remember, but how it's still vibrating. And he mentions that more than once.
If it's still touching his prostate, shouldn't he be coming like a fucking tiger?
You only got so much in you before you just double over and give up. Because
it's like if it's still prostate stimulating, whatever. But you know, we have this thing in this country where we don't want to acknowledge reality, so we bury ourselves in our TV, in our pop culture stupidity, in the idiotic music. We don't want to deal with the real world, so you get so lost into a fantasy world.
Well, we talked about this with counterculture. You're right. We don't have that big anti-establishment movement anymore. And it does seem like in the 60s, especially 1968, that young generation, that's what they wanted to do, was shine a spotlight on all the stupid things that adults were doing to fuck up this world. And now it just seems like all we want to do is shine a spotlight on all the stupid things adults and kids and
everyone
is doing in order to distract us from wars and 9/11 and the fact that you can't go through airport security without getting felt up, and we've got checkpoints that people are being stopped at in this country just for driving down the road.
Yep. Just, you know, in case.
Yeah, you know, and whether the cops use this as a DUI checkpoint as an excuse or an illegal immigrant checkpoint as an excuse, there's still checkpoints in the United States of America, which is ruled by the Constitution.
Supposedly.
Supposed to be.
But, like, what I'm talking about is, like, people get so into a TV show. You know, it was always a joke when we were kids in the 80s. You know, there was always that everybody had that one old woman in the neighborhood who was so into her stories.
Her stories.
That she didn't see actors or storylines. She saw reality. And, like, if she saw the actor on her stories on an episode of Cheers or Night Court or Hill Street Blues, she'd still think, oh, Reggie is now going over, you know, Reggie got arrested on Hill Street Blues. Oh my God, how is that going to affect his relationship with Joanne?
And I think even more than that, than the ones you mentioned, was the afternoon soap operas.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. And you know, her stories, you know, like the Luke and Laura thing.
Yeah, or you know, if and I'm just going to make up names because I never watched soap operas, frankly, but if Dr. Dave cheats on Samantha with Christine, oh my God, what, you know, I can't, they get angry with there is no longer a separation between the actor and the character.
Oh, not at all. And unfortunately, that is happening right now, Mr. Scott.
No. That was really big when soap operas were really big and people got into it, and maybe they had, you know, that champagne lunch or whatever. And but now, I mean, look at this. It's 2013. We're working on our second decade in the 21st century. I think people have outgrown that. There is no way that people can't separate the character from the actor.
Did you watch The Walking Dead in the second season?
Yeah.
Remember the episode where Daryl got all fucked up and felt when he was looking for her name just fell out of my head, the little girl, the little zombie girl.
Yes.
And he got all fucked up and he was dragging a corpse back with him.
Right.
And Laurie Holden's character, Andrea, thought he was a zombie, shot at him and just nicked him in the head.
Right.
Laurie Holden is getting death threats from fans because of that episode.
What? Wait.
Because.
What?
Okay. Norman Reedus and the character of Daryl Dixon has proved to be the breakout star from Walking Dead. Okay.
Right. And since he's a character,
and since he's a character that's not in the comics, that's, you know, wholly to the TV show.
Yes.
He is the most popular character, hands down, especially among women.
He's in Time Warner cable commercials, and he's been on The Nerdist and everything. Yeah, and he's good character and a good actor in that character role.
Well, Laurie Holden has been seriously getting death threats because of her attempt to kill Daryl Dixon by people who cannot seem to separate. This is a plot line. It is written by writers. Laurie Holden did not try and kill Norman Reedus. Andrea accidentally almost shot Daryl. It's not the same thing.
So it's still happening today then.
Yes. And AMC is forcing, well, not, I don't know what forcing, but they're putting out this big ad campaign showing Norman Reedus and Laurie Holden together so they can show people that, look, no animosity. They're friends. They're co-workers. Stop sending Laurie Holden death threats because of what her character did in a TV show.
Okay, well, look at the bright side. I mean, at least we still have colleges and universities and good professors and good teachers, especially when it comes to things like English. I mean, yeah, we've had, you know, people like Stephanie Meyer and a couple other people and the 50 Shades it's pretty crappy writing, but it appeals to the base. I can understand why it would appeal to people, but at least we still have college professors out there that are really working with the English language to get good writing back out there.
I mean, you know, you are one of the worst liars out there when you clearly know what we're talking about and you're trying to set it up.
I'm trying. Yeah, I was waiting for you to take over, and you never did.
I was going to see how far you were willing to go. I was just going to let you go for a little while.
So tell me about this.
The writer of 50 Shades of Grey, which, as for those that don't know, when E.L. James, not her real name, wrote 50 Shades of Grey, and I'm putting the word wrote in quotes there, it actually started out as Twilight fan fiction. It was basically Twilight slash porn.
Right.
Okay. And some publisher, I can't remember what publishing company it originally came out from, the 50 Shades. Somebody saw this and said, there's potential here, but we don't own Twilight. So you change it from Twilight fanfic and just make it straight out mommy porn. And this book somehow hit the cultural clit of every woman in America. And I don't understand it. You want to hear something creepy? Listen to the Geek Juice radio episode where all of the guys read various chapters of the book, totally, no pun intended, straight-faced. That's how bad the prose is, that these guys are laughing while cold reading some of this stuff like, this is fucking terrible! Good God!
I know why it hit the cultural clit of housewives in America, though.
Why?
I have a theory on this, at least.
That every woman secretly wants to be dominated and...
Okay. Stop for a minute. Now, let's go back to 2000 to 2005. What's popular on TV?
Reality TV?
Reality TV.
Pseudo-reality TV.
What we call reality TV. But what word enters the English language?
S&M?
No.
Well, it's technically two letters.
No. S&M was still down in clubs.
I don't know what word you're. I don't know where you're going with.
We're
this,
going so. With metrosexual.
I thought that was a '90s thing. Shit, nah. I heard that term back when Fight Club came out. It's used in the book of Fight Club, for fuck's sake.
Yes, it's been around since the '70s, but it became extremely popular, especially with things like Queer Eye for the Straight Guy.
Is that even still around?
No.
Okay.
No. And there was another one where gay guys came in and redecorated your home. Gay guys came in and gave a woman a makeover. Gay guys came in and did this and did that. And all of a sudden you ended up with this metro, you know, and
this
South
like
Park.
In between kind of?
The metrosexual was the straight, it was, if you ever spend any time on Craigslist, you say, looking for a queer, must be straight acting. Well, this was looking for a straight guy, must be gay acting.
You've lost me.
What are you talking about?
The whole Craigslist thing. Okay, if you're going to go there for a dating purpose, if you're looking for basically a queer, as you put it, what's the difference if he acts like he's not?
Well, there are.
Okay, this is where you've lost me.
Okay, there is a segment of the homosexual population that is attracted to the, I've called them twinks in the past. Young, swishy, feminine men.
Basically anyone who's been in a David DeCoto film in the last 20 years.
Now, on the opposite end of that is the bear. Generally older, generally hairier, much more manly and rugged. You kind of picture him in the hills of Alaska with an axe.
Kevin Smith and me.
Well, yeah, and the plaid shirt with the suspenders, chopping down trees, being a manly man, and he just happens to suck dick. There is and especially during my college years, what they wanted was the gay bro. It was the fraternity guy that was completely straight acting, and
but will suck your dick
would take it up the butt or suck dick or something like that. And that was a big thing. Well, enter Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, enter, you know, Gay Man Home Makeover, enter,
so
you
that
know,
just
kind of
entered popular
stuff.
Pop culture.
And it switched. You wanted the straight
I see what
man.
You did there.
Yeah.
I caught that.
You wanted the straight man who loved women, but at the same time could be their gay best friend. You wanted that swishy, effeminate man that was worried about his appearance, that was, you know, that used product in the hair.
So you kind of wondered Woody Allen. The way Woody Allen acts in his movies, he acts like
stupid. No, he's a neurotic Jew. He doesn't act.
He acts gay. He does not. Gay.
No,
yes,
he does. No, he doesn't. He acts like a stereotypical neurotic Jew. Andy Dick, stereotypically gay. There you go.
Okay, Andy Dick.
Andy Dick, stereotypically psychotic. But nonetheless, you wanted the metrosexual came around. You wanted that swishy, effeminate, product using, worried about appearance, et cetera, metrosexual straight male. You could take him home and explain all of your emotions and unload, and he would cry and snuggle with you and then fuck you. It was your gay best friend who was willing to fuck you. That's what people wanted.
So bisexuality is basically what you're talking about?
God, are you just dense? Were you not alive in 1995 or 2005? Were you... What is wrong with you?
I'm not into gay culture, this shit passes me by.
This was gay culture made its way into straight culture. This was straight culture.
I'm sorry, this shit passed me by.
Yes, it did, but nonetheless.
The only things I know about gay culture are either from you or by renting the wrong porno.
Do you remember Queer Eye for the Straight Guy?
I don't think I ever saw it, but I do remember flipping channels. You do remember flipping channels. I do remember it in the guide.
Bunch of gay guys took a straight dude, made him metrosexual.
Why would someone gave him want product. That, though?
That's what they wanted. Okay, now, enter a few years later, and E.L. James happens to write this S&M very heavy-handed, controlling male. I mean, and that's one thing that you got to give whatever the hell Gray's first name is he is domineering, he is male, he is masculine. You know, yeah, he's kind of worried about his product in the same way that the American Psycho was. But he is also, you know, you no longer have the swishy effeminate side. He is definitely man. And that's why I think it took over, is because every, you know, metrosexuality got really popular for a long while. And then all of a sudden somebody went, no, what happened to all my men? Where are my cowboys?
But okay, at the same time, now keep in mind, I have not read the 50 Shades stuff other than hearing the stuff that they did on Geek Juice and Nostalgia Critic.
I have the audiobooks. They're hilarious.
To me, what I've heard of it, and you know how I am about labels, okay?
Right.
It is the most anti-feminist shit I have ever seen.
Yes.
It's all about women are there to be dominated. The man makes all the decisions. Women do nothing without a man's permission. And somehow your average housewife just went, yes, this is what we want. And it's like taking a porno version of what a 50s housewife was.
And that's what I'm saying, is this metrosexuality took over, and you have swishy effeminate men using product in their hair and everything like that. And there is a sect of women out there, and apparently it's
a large
bigger
sect.
A large section of women out there that want that dominating man back in. And you're right, it is anti-feminist in a way. Now, don't get 50 Shades of Grey confused with actual S&M culture, because in actual S&M culture, and I'm just saying this for the listeners, the sub is in control. That's what the safe word.
Yes. I know that. But from what I can tell about 50 Shades of Grey, the whole point seems to be, I'm a woman and can't do anything for myself. Well, I need a man to show me everything, including, I wish Jowski hadn't told me this term, my inner goddess.
Oh, God. Coming from a pagan community, trust me, I have heard that a few times. Yeesh. Let's get out of 50 Shades and let's look at Twilight. Look at Bella. Bella is nothing without
that entire franchise is all about, if I can't have a man, I don't want to live.
Exactly. Well, that's part of it.
Isn't the second movie all about her trying to kill herself because she can't get the man she wants?
That's part of it. It's all about Bella surrendering to, you know, either a dog or a pedophile. That's what it's about. And it hit a segment of American women, and again, a large segment of both teenage girls and housewives who went, yes, I want a man to take everything away, all of my problems, all of my decisions, and just live through him and serve him. And there's a segment of women out there.
That's sad to me. It really is. It basically says, and I can't believe I'm the one saying this considering how many sexist jokes I make on a regular basis, that everything that the women's lib movement was about doesn't matter anymore.
On the surface, yeah, you're right. On the surface. Now, if you actually delve into the communities that are affected and stuff like that, it's a very different control dynamic. And feminism is still very much alive.
But okay, let's swing this back to 50 Shades of Grey and E.L. James because it goes back into our segment of the dumb.
Right.
Okay, now keep in mind what I said earlier in this show. 50 Shades of Grey started out as Twilight fanfic.
Right.
And if you've ever read it, it's horrible. Okay, Stephanie Meyer is a better writer than E.L. James. Oh, I feel dirty having just said that,
Scott.
Do
you need a shower?
Oh, my God, because Stephanie Meyer is like a 12-year-old girl, high school girl's level of prose, okay? And she dwarfs E.L. James's ability as a writer. Some publishing house just hired E.L. James to write a book on tips for being a good writer. That's like hiring Quentin Tarantino to talk to people about originality in movies. That's like hiring Nicki Minaj to judge a singing... Never mind.
Yeah, the voice kind of killed you on that one, didn't it?
It's like... never. That's like hiring Michael Bay to give a seminar on subtlety. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't refute that one, can you?
Can't refute that one at all.
But I mean,
it's like hiring us to host a radio show.
God, I know. But I mean, E.L. James giving tips to aspiring writers? Writing no longer has meaning at this point, Scott. Okay, Scott, I am not an amazing writer. I have grown a lot, and I think I have gotten much better. I think you'll give me that.
Yes, you have improved.
When I hit really well.
Yes.
I would not feel comfortable giving other writers tips on how to be an aspiring writer, and I could outwrite the living shit out of E.L. James with my fucking penis doing the typing.
It's a talented penis.
You never met my penis, and you never will.
There's a reason.
You never will.
You're right. We can agree on this. But, you know, this is also the same. You wrote a while back. Now, I know you recently posted that luckily it's being killed. But the Star Wars, the little
the detours.
Yeah, the detours.
I don't think I wrote about that. I think I went the fuck off on that. I think there was a difference.
Yeah, but that was, you know, that compare detours to the original trilogy. Hell, compare the prequels to the original trilogy, and you're going to talk about two different levels of directing, filmmaking, writing,
acting,
et cetera, et cetera. About the only thing that was still just as good as the original was the music.
Sound effects, maybe.
Yeah, sound effects too.
Audio.
Audio.
We'll put them all under the same umbrella.
Audio was still really, really good. Everything else got visibly dumber. The story got simpler. The characters got shallower. The Simpsons. The jokes got quicker. The characters got shallower. Homer used to have those little redeeming moments when he talked to Marge.
Oh, absolutely.
And you would come out that, yes, he still truly loves her, and he really did try to... He at least tried to do the smart thing. Now he's just...
Well, and
kill the boy.
You know, you even get the same thing, not even on a dumb level, with The Simpsons. You look at the early episodes, Bart was a troublemaker. You know, he was a 10-year-old kid. Now, I mean, in the last, like, 3 seasons, he's just patently fucking evil.
Yeah.
He is just an evil... He's like a prototype for a serial killer now.
Exactly.
And it's like, that's not Bart Simpson. Bart Simpson's not fucking evil.
Right. And people look back at Shakespeare and they go, gosh, that's boring, that's terrible, it's awful, it's horrible. But you look at Shakespearean characters, and there are people that make a living just trying to dissect the depth of a Shakespearean character. Let's contrast that, and I can't believe I'm going to do this.
Do it. Do it.
Let's contrast Ophelia from Hamlet with, oh, Bella.
You're two different types of crazy there.
Two different types of crazy.
Ophelia was fun crazy. Well, a little unpredictable, but fun compared to Bella.
Ophelia still threw her entire heart and her soul and her being into a man, Hamlet, that she had faith in. But she was driven crazy by his stupid ass, by his crazy. She was a manifestation of his craziness, of his trying to deal with his father's death and his uncle's taking of the family. It filtered through him into Ophelia and caused her suicide. She finally, after going nuts, trying to deal with Hamlet and trying to be a good woman to a man that she loved, killed herself. Versus Bella, who is an empty vessel. A completely empty, worthless human being with no depth of character that must be filled.
Then you know what? Christian Stewart was perfect casting.
Yeah.
The way you just described it, then she was.
She had the right facial expression.
Expression, singular.
Yeah, you'll notice that I didn't put an S on that.
Yeah, because she doesn't change. But
that's the thing. Bella doesn't change. She doesn't grow as a character. We start and we go, this is Bella. And at the end we go, this is Bella. And what's different? Nothing. She's a vampire now. Ow, that's my cat.
He just got jumped by Ad.
Jumped by Addie. She's up on my shoulder and she wants lovings now. But
then why? Why do these supposedly strong women, supposedly women that do really believe that women are equal to men, as I do, with all the sexist jokes I make, you know me, I truly do not believe that women are somehow inferior to men.
Right.
So how do these women latch on to shit like Twilight and 50 Shades? Is it some sort of weird primal release? Is it that they really don't have the convictions that we thought they had and this is what they really wanted? Or is it just kind of like the way we would never... I know I would never really probably kill a person. I don't know if I'd be able to really murder somebody.
Yeah, give me the right
But
motivation.
I love slasher flicks, and I love seeing people get killed.
Yeah.
So is that like some kind of primal fantasy I'm working out, or what?
Kind of. I think what it really is, and this is, and I'm going to get letters. I know I am. There are feminists out there who are just going to go, shut up!
You know what? I really don't think we have a large feminist listenership for this audience, Scott.
True.
So I don't think you have a lot to worry about.
But I know we're still going to get letters. And I think that this world is so complicated and in the shitter ever since our economy tanked.
Thank you, George W. Bush.
And ever since pretty much the 90s, it's gone kind of downhill. And we've had 9/11 happen. And we've had all of this heavy, you know, three wars and all of this heavy, heavy shit come down. I think that people in general are looking for a way to surrender. And I think women, when you look for role models that enable them to give up the smart, to give up the stress, give up the worry, give up control, you turn to characters like those in 50 Shades of Grey and like
Bella. You want to start riding instead of driving.
Exactly. They're ready, at least for a little while, as long as they can be in the same car and go to the same places, are willing to give up the driver's seat.
Okay, then what about, and I know I'm making a big stretch here, do you think some feminist thing, since we somehow segged from the dumb into weird feminism in that? Okay, these same women that love Twilight and 50 Shades of Grey, why do they also hate Myra Breckinridge?
I'm not sure.
Because isn't Myra Breckinridge really kind of a feminist fantasy? All about a man becoming a woman and then punishing all the men in Hollywood for the way that they treat women? Isn't that kind of a feminist fantasy?
No.
I mean, there's this scene where she fucking sodomizes the big jock. And you know what? I'll say it right now. Raquel Welch was never fucking hotter than in that scene. She just Wow.
Okay, for me, there's a difference. And for me, a feminist is a strong woman that wants to stand up and be equal to men.
Myra Breckinridge wanted to dominate men. But she was technically exactly. a man, though, too. Maybe that's what they didn't like, that she started out as Rex Reed.
Yeah, you can't be a powerful woman without being a man.
Maybe.
That might be it. But I think, and I'm going to, I think it's very important to get this out there because I'm seeing a rise. You want to talk about the dumbing down of America. I'm seeing a rise in what a lot of people see as a strong, powerful woman because she domineers and runs her world, and that's the way it is.
A castrating bitch is not a powerful woman.
To me, there's a very, very big difference between a man-hating, stupid, what Rush Limbaugh would call a feminazi, for lack of a better term.
I got in trouble on Facebook the other day for using the term feminazi.
I don't give a damn. feminazi, nigger. There, it's all out there. I've offended everybody. But the what I would call a feminazi is the one that wants preference. Okay.
I want to be equal. Being a woman is special,
exactly.
Not equal.
Exactly. You know, I want to be treated as your equal, but I still want you to pay the bill and open the door and do all of this special stuff.
Society expects
the stuff that's, you know, I think that, you know, I look down, for instance, my wife and I, we bounce back and forth who pays for dinner when we go out. And it's, we don't really make plans. We don't keep track. It just bounces back and forth. And I've had waitresses look at me like I'm less of a human being because my wife is paying the bill.
Really?
Yeah.
Even in 2013?
Yeah. And to me, a feminist is one that's willing to stand up next to a man and, you know, I am his equal. I will stand next to him, and if you're in a relationship with a real feminist, which I think I am, if you listen to what my wife says, we stand together as equals. I support her when need be, and she supports me when need be. Versus, I hate to call her out, but the nostalgia chick who has rounded a corner.
Oh, she is a feminazi.
Yes, and she really has rounded a corner. She used to be a good, strong, if you watch her early stuff, she talks about being a strong, independent woman who stands up as an equal to men. And
I think her ego got in the way. In the case of Lindsay Ellis, I think her ego got in the way, and she started to believe her own hype.
Yeah.
I really do, because her stuff, like that one that she did on gay Disney characters.
Yes.
That was one of the most... I'm straight. That offended me. How did... And I read quite a few of the comments. Gay people were offended at the broad stereotype she was painting. All the while she was defending. I'm defending gays in cartoons.
Oh, yes.
And they're like, no, you're not.
Not at all. Not one bit.
That was offensive to me.
Yeah. And that's when they round the corner and they... And I've seen people do this with gay rights too. When it comes to gay rights of marriage and you know, I want to be able to get married. I support that. That's an equal thing.
Yeah.
But you know, once you get the chance to marry and to get the, you know, things like hospital visits, things like wills and all of these other rights that come along with this, don't then turn around. And I've seen some gay people do this, turn around and, you know, not only do I now have equal rights as you, but I'm going to shove it in your face and you're going to accept it regardless of your religious or political views. You can fight for equality and gain equality, but you can't force acceptance.
Do you know what I think was the one of the most fair and even-handed, while still being funny, portrayals of gay marriage I've seen in the last decade?
Yeah, what's that?
The series finale of Boston Legal.
Okay.
Where Denny Crane is, you know, got Alzheimer's and he's getting worse and worse and he's got no one to take care of him. He wants Alan Shore, James Spader's character, who, you know, they're... The way that they're basically are, they're lovers without actually having sex. You know, that these are two men that truly love one another.
Okay.
They go to Canada and get married, so then that way Alan has power of attorney over Denny when things get really bad. And it's not handled, you know, flamboyantly. It's not handled hatefully. It's handled like two guys that are making a business decision and two guys that truly care about one another. It was actually quite touching. That final scene of them getting married in Canada, you know, on a dock.
And that makes perfect sense to me. And then that's where feminism and gay rights advocacy, any rights advocacy, can go. Pagan rights can do the same thing. And there are a lot of pagans who are going, we are equal to Christians. And there are a lot of pagans out there going, we want our churches to have the same rights as Christian churches. And yeah, constitutionally they do.
Are pagans tax exempt? Do you guys get tax exempt status?
Wiccan churches can, yeah.
Okay.
They can.
Because I was going to say, if not, then that's definitely not equal.
It depends on the state. But getting a pagan church recognized and getting that tax exempt status is very difficult.
If Scientology can do it,
I know
we could make a religion to get tax exempt status.
Yes, we could. But none.
the Church of List.
Static, yes.
The Church of List.
Litz.
Shut up.
The church. That's our dyslexic wing. The Church of List. Speaking of the dumbing of America, Josh just. But. And any rights advocacy, is especially once they succeed, can. And no, I'm not saying that women's rights are equal. Thank you, Governor Walker. I'm certainly not saying that
Republican gay Party are, in general, yeah, dude.
Yeah, and you know, gay rights, I can stand behind it, but there's a difference between you must see me as an equal and give me the same rights you have versus you must accept my lifestyle as acceptable to you. And let's pretend for a moment that you're a Christian fundamentalist.
Oh, this will be fun.
I'm Mr. Super Gay.
Okay.
All of a sudden, Wisconsin recognizes gay marriage.
I am offended. I am offended at this affront to Jesus Christ. Exactly. I will pray to my Lord. You told me to play the part.
I know, and you're playing the part well. Now, that's how your typical religious fundamentalist would react. And Mr. Gay Rights Advocate would simply look back and go, yeah, but we're equal now. Me, go off and live your life, and I'm going to go live mine.
And see, that's the way I am.
And that's,
I don't care if exactly. There's a gay couple in my neighborhood married.
This is what happens to the rights advocate that gets into the dumb of America. No, you know what we're going to do? I'm going to get 100,000 men. We're going to come to your church lot, and we're just going to get naked and butt fuck each other on the lot. We're going to cover the grass in Santorum. We're going to come in and just we're going to rape each other on the altar.
There's until gonna you say, going to be KY jelly flying everywhere.
Exactly. Until you say it's okay. And
I will burn you to hell. Yeah. That jelly does not go with the peanut butter.
Exactly. We stop now.
Okay. Well, you didn't tell.
But
okay.
to me, as a rights advocate, that's taking it a step too far. I am never going to get a religious fundamentalist to look at me and go, "Okay, paganism and gay, that's perfectly fine." I'm never going to get that. I'm never going to go to the Westboro Baptist Church and have them have, you know, rainbow love in. It's not going to happen.
Well, now. In our last 10, I'd like to, we might as well stay on this topic.
I'm sorry I switched topics somehow in the middle.
We might as well stay on this. What is your opinion as someone who is homosexual? Well, I mean, you know you're
bisexual, but big into homosexual rights, yes.
What do you think about the Orson Scott Card debacle at DC and the one that's definitely coming this summer, fall, when Ender's Game comes out? You're aware of this, right?
Yes.
For those that don't know, Orson Scott Card is a huge anti-gay advocate. He's also a huge science fiction writer. He has said such dumb things like gay marriage is the end of democracy in America and that straight couples will have to actually retake the government in a coup to reset traditional marriage. Okay, he's given tons of money to anti-gay causes to pray out the gay and shit. By the way, pray out the gay just lost their tax exempt status just this week.
Yes,
I think that's really funny.
I heard about that, and I'm very, very, very happy.
But okay, he is obviously a very controversial writer.
Yes.
Well, DC Comics hired him to write a Superman story. And that blew the fuck up. The artist said he will not work with Card and walked off the story.
Right.
Retailers said, if DC publishes this, they will not carry that issue of Adventures of Superman or whichever title it was. And you know what? Orson Scott Card is playing the victim. Those goddamn homos are trying to take my right of free speech away. He is portraying himself as the fucking victim in this.
Well, that's perfect spin. That's what you do.
But I mean, gee, being a raging homophobe all over the internet and on TV hurts your career? Who'd have thunk it, Scott?
Yeah, in a town like Hollywood. Imagine if he'd tried to make a movie. Wait a minute.
Yeah, that's the other thing. This is starting, Warner Brothers, who owns DC, has kind of quietly kind of pushed this away. It's not made in CNN or anything yet. They kind of quietly, okay, we'll just pay him and he'll go away. Well, Ender's Game, starring Harrison Ford, comes out, I think it's fall.
Yeah.
That's a $400 million film. It's based on Orson Scott Card's first Ender's book. This controversy is not going away.
No.
In fact, when this movie comes out, it's going to blow up huge.
Yes.
There's no way that Ender's Game does not get protests, does not get bans. Okay, this movie, there's no way this movie makes back its budget, I think, theatrically. There's not a chance.
I'm amazed.
Too much controversy.
I'm amazed it got made.
Well, he didn't start this raging homophobia. I mean, he was, he had some stuff on the internet. It wasn't the raging stuff until after the movie started production.
Ah, okay.
I think Warner Brothers, Paramount, whoever's making the movie is just going, oh, fuck.
Either that or they'll movie 43 it.
And just kind of, no.
It's in theaters, it's out.
No, not with the budget it has, not with Harrison Ford and the cast.
Yeah, that's true.
No, this thing is their tentpole movie for the 2013. Yeah, There's no way this is just going away.
You know, we'll see. I think that the truth is Orson Scott Card is an idiot. He's a fool, and he destroyed his own career. Yeah, he makes it abundantly clear
to me. And I'm going to lose some points here. I do respect the guy in a small way. He's sticking by his guns. That is a respectable trait. He's not backpedaling.
That I'll give him. He does. I mean, it takes a pair of balls to stand up against homosexuality, like I said, in a town like Hollywood, California.
Yeah.
I think they should drive him out to West Hollywood, drop him in the middle and go, look who this is. And we'll see what happens.
Or drive him down to San Francisco, Castro Street?
Yeah. Drop him off in Boys Town.
But so what do you, as someone who is up on all the gay stuff, do you think Orson's career is over? Like, for you, have you read any of the Ender's books?
I did. I read Ender's Game.
Okay, I read the second one, Speaker for the Dead. That's the only one I've read. Because each book is standalone enough that you don't need to have read the other books, but they all form a trilogy with the same character.
Right.
So I've read Speaker for the Dead, you've read Ender's Game. Knowing what you know now about Orson Scott Card, does it color some of the themes and things that you read in that book?
Well, of course. I mean, we talked about context a while back.
You separate the art from the artist?
Yeah, can you separate the art from the artist? This throws what he's written into a new context. So, of course, it's going to change how it looks a little bit. I enjoyed Ender's Game. I'm not going to lie. I didn't know at the time about his homophobia, and neither did anyone, really. He kept it pretty much to himself. And to tell you the truth, I enjoyed the story.
I like Speaker for the Dead. But here's the weird thing. Card's work always has a theme of anti-fascism to it. So then it's kind of funny when he is all about taking the rights away from a group of people, isn't it?
Yeah.
Doesn't that have a strange... I mean, since when he wrote those, I don't know if he was a raging homophobe then or not, or if it just hadn't come out. What if this is something like he got a brain tumor and he wasn't when he wrote the books and now he is? I mean, maybe there's a medical condition we don't know about.
Well, I mean, Orwell didn't set out to write 1980. Orwell was actually, if you look at his life outside of 1984, he was very much in support of a heavy-handed established government.
Does it cloud your judgment at all reading Robert E. Howard or H.P. Lovecraft, knowing that they were hardcore Klan member racists? Even some of that is reflected in their work.
Some of that is reflected in their work. But
does it make you lose respect for all the brilliance that Lovecraft had, knowing that he thought blacks were subhuman?
No, because of the time. And that, again, that's time-sensitive context. And we've talked about this before. But looking at that stuff now, and I'm going to keep this modern with the Orson Scott Card. Yeah, it's kind of like somebody hanging up a Picasso and admiring the Picasso and then throwing a big dollop of poop on it. It's still a Picasso. It's still an impressive artwork. There just happens to be a big dollop of poop on it. And that's a shame. And that poop can be washed away, maybe. But it's still there. It's there right now. And I don't know. I mean, it's Ender's Game is still an excellent story. I don't know about the other two, but Ender's Game is still an excellent story.
Speaker for the Dead was great.
H.P. Lovecraft stuff, still excellent and terrifying stories.
Shockingly original.
Yes, they might have a little bit of poop on them. But that's probably because, tell you the truth, Call of Cthulhu scared the poop out of me at one point. But the deal is, you know, and with stuff like Lovecraft, you got to take the time that it was made and when he was living. There are a slew of absolutely brilliant and artistic racists and homophobes out there.
Yeah.
And there are some pretty badly, you know, there are lots and lots of bad gay actors out there too.
Well, do you think that the backlash against Orson Scott Card is justified, or do you think that, like, people protesting outside the movie when it comes out, because we both know this is going to happen, that are protesting outside the movie, or like even retailers who were not going to stock the Superman issue, do you think that is their right of protest, or do you think they really are forcing? Because let's say, for the sake of argument, the Superman story he was going to write, nothing to do with homophobia at all, and it was just a cool Superman story. Do you think that they have the right to block the rest of us from even reading that story and deciding for ourselves whether we had a problem with it?
I think if you own a retail shop, you have the right to stock what you wish to stock.
But they stopped the story from ever even seeing print, even being drawn. So nobody gets, outside of DC Comics, gets to see what Orson wrote for Superman.
Until he finds the right people to do it.
No, DC killed it.
I know DC killed it. But in the day of the internet, he can find the right people to do what he wants to do, and he'll get the story out there if he really wants to get the story out
there. So I'm just saying, maybe these people robbed me of a really, really good Superman story.
Maybe.
Because they don't like the man.
Maybe. But that's their right as artists.
So I'm just saying, that's the dichotomy I'm posing to the audience.
And it's weird. And the people protesting outside of the movie theater, as long as they're protesting fact, as long as they're protesting the man versus...
So do you think the same thing was right back in 1984 with Silent Night, Deadly Night? All the moms that protested outside that and actually got the movie pulled from theaters because of the controversy around it?
No, because the moms were stupid protesters. They didn't know what they were protesting against. They just saw
something and
latched on.
That's why I'm asking you, what's the difference between Silent Night, Deadly Night and the inevitable Ender's Game protests?
The Ender's Game protests are protesting against a man and where a man stands. If they're smart, they'll go, the man who wrote this movie is a raging homophobe and we do not support him. We suggest you do not either, and here is why.
Then why not the same thing for Battlefield Earth? For anti-Scientology.
I never said.
I'm asking you.
No, I agree.
You know, Battlefield Earth, there was no protests, strangely enough.
Yeah, I know.
And I actually think that the Scientology shit is actually more offensive than, like I said, if they adapted Ender's Game properly, there's not really any homophobia in it.
I don't think that it had entered popular culture yet. I don't think the anti-Scientology stuff had entered popular culture yet.
All right.
But nonetheless, we got to wrap up. So yep. It's a lot to think about.
We started off fun and we got serious as this one went along, but that's going to happen. So I guess because we became relevant at the end, this episode does not contribute to the dumb.
That's true. Hopefully all of ours at least gets people thinking and asking questions.
No, last week's was definitely a contribution to the dumb.
Okay, yeah, last week's was contribution to the dumb. But we started off with the dumbing down of America. We've moved on to protests that turned a corner. So thanks a bunch for joining us. We will see you guys next week. Josh, you got anything else to say? That's lovely. Good night, everybody.